Hell Yes Life, episode 28. Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, the show that helps you come alive so you can live a hell yes life. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. I am your host, Norman Bell, and I'm excited to be here. I hope you are too. This is the place to hear inspiring stories and actionable tips from our amazing guests that will motivate you to live your Hell Yes Life. So welcome. The Hell Yes Life podcast releases new episodes every Tuesday and now sometimes on Thursdays and Fridays. Keep an eye out for those. Hell Yes Lifers, if you want to write a review, please visit hellyeslife.com/HYL iTunes. That's /HYL iTunes. And also, I encourage you to join us in our Hell Yes Life Facebook community, where we're supporting each other in moving forward on our Hell Yes Lives. We have daily themes now. We set goals at the beginning of the week. We inspire each other with quotes in the middle. And we wrap up by checking in on how we did over the course of the week. So if you want to join us there, you can visit hellyeslife.com/Facebook. That's hellyeslife.com/Facebook. And lastly, I'd love to hear directly from you, Hell Yes Lifers. Your feedback is super valuable and much appreciated. So to offer any feedback about what you like about the show, what you want to see more of, who you want to see on the show, visit hellyeslife.com/contact. That's hellyeslife.com/contact. All right, let's get into today's episode. Hell Yes Lifers, today my guest is Olympia LaPointe, and I am super excited to have Olympia on the show. She is definitely living a Hell Yes Life. Olympia LaPointe is an internationally recognized science leader who has helped launch over 28 space shuttle missions. She helped launch NASA's Endeavour, Discovery, Columbia, and Atlantis space shuttles. And yet, Olympia's road to this kind of success was not a straight one. She grew up in challenging circumstances. She actually failed algebra and geometry in high school, but she kept persisting in working towards her vision of working at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Now, with some help from teachers and others along the way, Olympia went on to earn a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics and a Master's of Science in Applied Mathematics, and she actually graduated as one of the top five in her class at California State University, Northridge. Now, Olympia's written her first book, Mathophobia: How You Can Overcome Your Math Fears and Become a Rocket Scientist. She also has a TED Talk called Reprogramming Your Brain to Overcome Fear, which has received over 600,000 views so far. Now, in our conversation, we talked about the steps she recommends taking to overcome fear, whether it's fear of math or other things. Plus, she shared her amazing story about how she went from struggling in math and science in high school to do all the amazing things that she's done since. Olympia has a really inspiring story. I'm looking forward to sharing it with you. So let's dive in. Olympia LaPointe, welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast. Are you ready to tell us about your Hell Yes Life?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me on your show.
All right. Thanks, Olympia. Thanks for being here. I'm really excited to share your story with our listeners. I always like to start off by asking our guests, what is your Hell Yes? And what I mean by that is, what's your passion, the thing that really lights you up and makes you come alive?
For me, the Hell Yes Life is making sure that people understand the power that exists within their thoughts and within their brain so they can unleash all the great things in their life. And I did that in my life by overcoming severe adversity to become an award-winning rocket scientist, where I helped launch 28 missions into space.
Oh, that is awesome. And I can hear the passion in your voice as you're talking about that. So you're really, you know, the overall goal is to help people overcome fear. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that. I watched your TED Talk. I want to share your tips with our listeners. But first of all, I want to hear your story. So again, you mentioned that you went through that in your TED Talk. But can you just give us an overview about your story?
I thank you so much for asking about my story. A lot of people believe that once you are trained to be a rocket scientist, that's you've always been placed into the great schools and you've always had a winning shot to do such great work. But in my case, it was the exact opposite. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles in the 1980s, where it was heavily gang violence and poverty. And we came through a lot of things. My family and I came through a lot of things. And in my TED Talk, Reprogramming Your Brain to Overcome Fear, I talk about my own specific life struggles, which included surviving gang violence, which also included living through poverty, making sure that we were not hit by stray bullets in the environment. But not only that, when I was bused into a school across the other area into a completely new area of the city, I then started failing algebra and failing geometry, calculus, and chemistry, and I was on my way to not doing well at all, and I was the exact farthest away from rocket science. And although I had went to a field trip when in my first grade year when I was 6 years old and I knew I wanted to be a rocket scientist, all these adversities and all these type of situations that brought fear into my life almost made me stop going on the path in which I was so passionate about. And it wasn't until 11th grade when I had a trigonometry teacher that later became my calculus teacher who helped me understand the power that I brought to the table, which was the power in thoughts. We each have the ability to change our situation based on how we think. But I didn't know that fear was stopping me. And through this opportunity of working with the instructor and the teacher at that time, I learned that I was cutting off my own ability to succeed in life because I was letting fear stop me. And it was through that experience of working with him that I learned to master not only mathematics and solve the problems and overcome my own fear, which I call mathophobia in my book, but I also learned that we have the ability to change the way that we are thinking so we can actually unleash success in our life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Love what you're saying there. I do want to back up a little bit before I want to hear all about your time at NASA and as a rocket scientist and everything that you've done since. But just to before we go there, I'd like to ask, where did that come from, this love of math? And especially if you were really struggling with it. I know, let's just say math is not one of my top subjects. And I don't know if I have mathophobia, but I definitely a topic that I kind of veer away from. Now, what kept you coming back to it over and over again? Can you kind of describe how does math make you feel?
When I studied mathematics, it was always a puzzle. I looked at it as a game. It was early on, it was like maybe 6 years old, that my sister, at the same time that I went to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, where I saw these big rocket engines where I knew I wanted to be a rocket scientist, she also taught me how to bake. This may sound silly, but she taught me how to bake sugar cookies. And so she showed me how to put the butter and the margarine there and the sugar and the flour and how fractions work. And I was so fascinated by this because if I mastered the fractions, I could make these wonderful cookies. I know that sounds strange, but I could make these wonderful cookies. And I was mastering doubling the cookies and doing different things with them and making all these different concoctions of the cookie recipes based on how I was doubling and subtracting the fractions. And so when I saw mathematics working in fractions and how it could actually create something I really enjoyed, math was actually always exciting. And then when I got further along into mathematics and when things started happening in my life that were very troubling, I found that mathematics was the only subject that always had an answer. Now, you could always look at it in several different ways, but the answer always existed in the core. And no matter what, the answer was always there. But the question was, were you willing to spend time to find it? So I always loved mathematics because it told me the truth. And sometimes when we are going through such tough situations, all we need is truth. And for me, when I saw mathematics and actually calculated it and actually worked with it, I realized that it always would share and point a way that would answer not only a mathematical question, but it would also answer a question that was happening in real life. And as I would solve each problem in mathematics, my confidence increased. Each problem that I found that I could be able to solve and answer, I became better at solving problems in real life. And so it was so fascinating, because when I went through emotional struggles, that's when my grades started really suffering. And the reason why I found that to be the case is that when we're going through emotional trouble, the reptilian part of the brain fires. It's kind of like the part of the brain that is responsible for the fight, flight, or freeze response. And so anytime we're going through emotional trouble, this amygdala, the reptilian part of the brain, fires. And when that fires, the frontal brain lobes shut down. The frontal brain lobes and the amygdala cannot work in conjunction. It's either or. And what's so fascinating about mathematics is that when we solve problems, we have to use the frontal brain lobes. But if we cannot solve a problem, that's when our frontal brain lobe is turned off. And that's when the amygdala, the fear, is turned on.
So you're saying that the fear can actually arise in the midst of doing math. Is that mathophobia? So you're kind of in the midst of a complex problem. You don't know the answer. That leads to fear. And then that shuts down your frontal lobe. And you're kind of in a dead end at that point.
Actually, the fear starts before you even look at mathematics. The fear actually starts in three places. It can either start from getting the fear of math from a parent, you can receive the fear of math from a teacher, or you can get the fear of math through an educational school system. And people don't start off with a fear. They're taught the fear. And when they're going through very difficult situations in life, the emotional part of the situation, coupled with the fear that was introduced, then takes hold like a wildfire in the brain. And someone stops solving problems. And that's when the fear of math takes over and the mathophobia halts down someone's ability to solve not only problems in mathematics, but problems in real life.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine that this obviously applies to math, but so many other areas of our lives too, right? We just, once fear sets in, we're paralyzed. We're like a deer in headlights. So what can somebody do if they're in this situation? Let's say there's somebody listening to this interview now, and maybe they are like you. Maybe they have an interest in math and science, but they have run into roadblocks because of their fear.
Oh, this is such a great question. If someone has a mathophobia, the first thing I do is share, you've got to name your mathophobia, call it out. It's not a part of you. That fear has never belonged to you. That's something that you have accepted. And so there's actually a self-test on mathophobia.com where you can actually find out what type of mathophobia you have been experiencing. When people go through type of situations, they fall into four different categories. The first category is Quincy the quitter. He'll quit before he even tries anything difficult. And that's his way of being able to cope. So if you're in a situation where you want to do mathematics well, and you open up a book and you're overwhelmed, you freeze up and you end up quitting. That's Quincy the quitter. Donna the overdoer is the second type of dysfunctional problem solver, where she will do anything and everything and overdo it in order to just understand or try to master things. Like, for example, she's the person that will memorize every single formula in the book. Or in dating situation, let's say, it's a guy that calls a girl over and over and over again, expecting her to call him back each day.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't work, does it?
It doesn't work. It's if we see this type of personality in many different facets, and over at work, we see that with very, very, very competitive people in the workforce as well that do not listen to the cues and suggestions of certain situations. So the Donna the overdoer is the next type of problem solver that is dysfunctionally solving problems. The next person is Samuel the Struggler. Samuel the Struggler is a person who is a brilliant Einstein in disguise, but he thinks about things so differently and he sees things so differently than everyone else that no one can understand what he's talking about. And he gets frustrated because they don't understand him. So he's a person in a class that has done well, or he's a person that he's looked back on his past and he realizes that he's gotten angry in math classes or at teachers because they didn't understand him or they thought he was stupid when he really wasn't. He was really bright, but he needed to find a way to express himself so other people can understand him. And then the last person is Crystal the Criticizer. Crystal the Criticizer is somebody who is so good at pointing the fingers to everyone else about her poor performance that she doesn't take ownership over her own life. So those are the four types of people that we become when we have fear and when we are trying to solve problems dysfunctionally. So first we have to name our fear. The second thing that we have to do is that once we name our fear, we have to actually reject those thoughts and reprogram our brain with different thoughts. Now, there are such things as defeating thoughts. Those are thoughts that if we spend enough time on them, they will grow and they will manifest and they will literally create poor situations. For example, if Quincy the Quitter is somebody who gets overwhelmed with so many math problems and he doesn't know where to start, and he goes home and he thinks, I am not going to be able to find someone to help me, he's going to come across really, really bad issues if he doesn't change his thinking. And the way he would change his thinking is that he would say, okay, there is somebody who is willing to help me, and I'm going to find out who it is. And that process of changing the way that he is thinking about a situation then changes how the outcome will happen, and it actually reprograms the inside of his brain. And the third step what we want to do is we want to actually take action in direct opposition to our fear. For example, if Quincy the Quitter is somebody who's used to quitting and he thinks that no one will help him, he has to change his thoughts, and then he has to actually take action, which is that's scary. For example, he has to find someone who's going to help him. And then once, let's say he goes to tutoring, he does problems with the tutor. And then let's say he goes home and he may not understand everything, but he tries a couple of problems on his own. The mere fact of him doing something that seems challenging and overwhelming, but he's breaking through that and still doing it regardless of that fear, that then creates change in his brain and new neurons are formed. And in that process, he's literally reshaping his brain to completely overcome fear. And that's how we overcome mathophobia.
That is awesome, Olympia. You know, and I appreciate you kind of breaking it down like that, because on the surface, it sounds kind of simple. It's like, well, I'm feeling this fear. I'm going to, you know, turn around and do something else. But to really, I think there's a kind of a mindfulness of what you're talking about. It's like to say, oh, wait, there's that fear. I'm going to name that and understand that that's not a part of who I am. And then to take those other steps to counteract that fear. So that's a great process that you take people through. I do want to back up just a little bit, because I think we left you in your story at the part of your story where you got some help from your trigonometry teacher. And I want to hear a little bit more from there. So tell us a little bit more about how that teacher helped you overcome your fear of math and to move forward. And then I really want to hear about your time at NASA.
Oh, great. I actually was really scared in mathematics. I really loved it, but I wasn't doing well, and I felt defeated. And I was getting my scores back, and I was getting these papers back, and it had 63% and 38%, and I thought I was never going to get it. And it was in calculus at the time. And I just kept up every single semester taking a math class, because I knew that's was something I needed to do. And I remember this teacher offered people the opportunity to get free mathematics tutoring if they simply came to the campus during the winter break. And I thought that was wonderful, because I didn't have access to tutoring at all. We came from a poverty-stricken area, and somebody offering tutoring was just amazing. And so I didn't even have money to catch the bus to get to the campus. And I remember there was a kind gas station attendant that knew I didn't have any money, and he knew I needed to get to school. And what he would do for 30 days is that, and I have to just God bless him because what he did was so amazing. He loaned me $1.35 each way so I could catch the bus 2 hours just to sit with the man, the math teacher, for 1 hour for 30 days. And it was the kindness of his heart that he did that. And it was the decision that I made to go through with this, no matter how much time it was going to take. And it was that coupled with the teacher that sat down with me. And I remember when he sat down with me, he literally showed me steps. And it felt like he was telling me the same thing over and over again, and I wasn't picking it up. But I remember going over the information with him, and I realized after a while, it was the same thing. It was the same concept, and things started clicking. And I would, it would be a beautiful end of the story if I told you that I aced the calculus test and everything after that. But in reality, I didn't. And it took probably a good 6 months for it to actually finally settle in my brain. And when it did, I was faster at mathematics than my peers. And I found myself tutoring, my first job, I found myself tutoring at California State University Northridge, helping other people overcome their math fear. And all of us together, there was group tutoring programs, there was around 10,000 of us that learned the same process that I learned from the man. And we were each able to overcome our math phobia. And I was thankful to become one of top 5 graduates out of a 6,500 graduating class from California State University Northridge because of that time.
That is so amazing. What a great story. And I actually, I like the fact that you didn't, you still didn't do well at the calculus test because you kept going, right? And it does have a happy ending because you continue to persevere. And then, like you said, you graduated top 5 in your class. And then actually just take us forward from there. So how do you get from there to NASA?
Oh my God. I'm a firm believer that people need to know that you exist. And right after I finished top of the school, a newspaper, the Daily News here in Los Angeles, California, highlighted me. It was back in 1998 as one of the top graduates. And I was calling up through companies asking them if they needed somebody to do math. And there was one company that was looking for me. Not necessarily me, but I came through and I had all the skills that they were looking for. And they were looking for a statistician, and it was a type of mathematician that uses statistics. And I graduated and I went to work for the Boeing company. And when I first went there, I was 21 years old. And I used mathematics to look at accounting work. But there was this man that also studied statistics, and he was overworked. And there was only one other person at the company that was helping him. And so he was officially a rocket scientist. And I remember asking him one day about how I did a math problem in my graduate work, because I went to graduate school at nighttime when I was working full time. And so it's through that opportunity that I got a chance to know him. And then when I got a chance to know him, I found out that he needed help. And so I would actually finish my work, and I did something that no corporate person on the face of the planet ever thinks about doing. I went and actually spent time after my work, and I helped him. And I was just so thankful to just learn. And a couple months later, I became one of the youngest rocket scientists in history. Being a rocket scientist at the age of 21, and I worked for the Boeing company, and I was switched over to his group, directly working with him as an official, what we call propulsion scientist. It's the fancy term for rocket scientist. And in that process, I helped launch 28 missions to space using mathematics and science to calculate the probability of catastrophic explosion within flight.
Wow. That's so cool. Can you bring us there? Like what you're, so you're in there, let's say you're working on one of those, one of the missions, and what is it that you're doing? So were you there during the actual, launch of the rockets, or were you kind of doing calculations beforehand? What would take us there?
I was doing all three. It took a progression. Eventually at the pinnacle of my career, I was in supporting mission control, where I was in this dark room looking at numbers for 12 hours straight with a team of 12 other people. And my job was to look at every single parameter and component of that engine and be able to predict and stop any type of failure before it would explode. And it was so stressful. There's times in which we went into work at 1 o'clock in the morning and we wouldn't come out until 24 hours later. That's how it was. It was like a 12-hour preparation. And then afterwards, we had to make sure if there was the launch was scrubbed, which is if it was delayed, we had to find out what delayed it and come up with a resolution so we could solve it within 24 hours and we could launch it again. So it was one of the most challenging and stressful and exciting periods of my existence. And my job was to look at these big screens and look at the high pressure pumps, look at the valves, look at the oxidizer flow, look at any type of vibrations and be able to figure out if there were a problem to occur, how to solve it within 5 seconds. And if not, shut off, to make a suggestion to shut off that engine. So it was one of the most exciting parts. But then it took work to get there. There was times before that I had to know exactly what all the parameters were within engine tests. So it was one point in time in which the space shuttle main engine had to have my signature to test it. And every single type of engine test required a reliability system safety signature, which was indicating that every single thing a part of that test, that rocket engine test, was going to work successfully to prevent any type of loss of life. So it required looking at every single detail of those engines to verify signing off, putting my signature there, indicating that there was going to be no chance that there was going to be a danger in that particular test. So in order to do that, I had to know every single weld, over 2,000 welds in all the locations, had to know all the different ducts and lines and drainage points, and I also had to know all the different temperatures and vibrations that were expected to know what was excessive versus what would cause a potential problem in the future. So that was a lot. And so I had signed off on engine tests. And before I signed off on engine tests, I was literally looking at 200 past launches and looking at all the different failures that happened in those launches to determine the trend. And I'm like a walking encyclopedia when it comes to knowing about all the history of all the engines, because that was my specialty. And I'm really thankful to have been a part of the space shuttle program before it retired in 2011. And it retired because it was simply, if we think about it, it's just an old vehicle. It was something that was used to go out into space. And after a while, you need to retire it off the road. And the road was from the ground to the sky. It's similar to having like a 1978 Honda Civic. Let's say that. It's like having a 1978 Honda Civic on the road with engine problems. Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's not going to work. You got to fix this. You got to fix this and then bring it back. So that's the reason. It was just an old system. And so I'm just so thankful to have worked on that program, so thankful to consult for other space programs. And I'm so thankful to be able to share how people can use this math and science in new ways. And that's what I'm doing right now. All the science that I use to actually show how to launch into space, I'm actually now showing how to people to remap their own brain using it.
Absolutely. Well, what an amazing and inspiring story, just to hear that whole progression of, you know, you coming back, persevering time and time again at this topic that I'll tell you would have thrown me off probably early on. And also interesting to hear that you had help, some help along the way, right? There was everything from the gas station attendant that gave you money to that teacher to that employee at Boeing. That when we're on our path, we meet people like that who help us on our way. Would you agree?
Oh, we must definitely agree. And that's what I tell all of my students as I teach as a mathematics professor now. That's what I tell my large crowds of guests that come to my keynote speeches, is that There is always, always someone willing to help you, but you have to take the initiative to step out of your comfort zone and ask for it to get to where you need to go.
Absolutely. Well, Olympia, I want to be mindful of your time. I know that you have a class coming up here, so we'll start to wind things down. I wanted to ask if, again, for our listeners out there, if there was one action that you would recommend that somebody who's listening to this podcast take if they wanted to take a meaningful step towards their hell yes life, whether it be math or something else, does anything come to mind?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What comes to my mind is, you have to define your life for yourself. You can never expect somebody to rescue you. You can never expect somebody to solve all your problems. What you have to do is take ownership over your life and realize that you've been given every single capability and resource right now to be able to solve what it is that you need to move forward. You have everything that you have for you. It is your decision to move forward.
Awesome. Olympia, it sounds like you're talking directly to our listeners. So hell yes, lifers, I heard you. I hope you heard that out there. Olympia's talking to you. Do you have, I always like to ask our guests if you have like a quote or a resource that has helped you along the way that you would like to share with our listeners.
Oh yeah, actually I love different scientists. I love innovative people. I love people who are doing great things with how they are thinking and how they're changing the world. And so Answers Unleashed is my platform online. If you go to answersunleashed.com, you have just great different insight from all these other people who created this breakthrough methods in their lives. And I'm just so thankful to have quotes from all these just great living people that are doing great things. And so I just direct people to go to answersunleashed.com and see all the different words and direction that other people like myself have gone through in order to change your life. And I share that with all the listeners so they too can change their lives.
Okay, great. And we will include links in the show notes to Answers Unleashed. Is that the best place for people to go to find you? Or do you have another website or any other place on the internet?
Oh yeah, people can directly find me and contact me through OlympiaLapointe.com. And people can also find me on Facebook.com/OlympiaLapointe.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Olympia. I know your class is starting soon here, so we'll let you go. But before we go, I always like to say hell yes together with my guests. Are you ready to do that on the count of three?
Yeah.
Okay. One, two, three.
Hell yes!
All right. Thanks a lot, Olympia.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a hell yes life.